Welcome back to the Kurdish Research Audio Archive. Today, we're looking at a really compelling set of sources exploring the remarkable journey of the Circassians in northern Syria. Our mission really is to unpack their unique history, understand the challenges they face today, and sort of connect the dots on how global events keep shaping this incredibly resilient people. You'll get a thorough understanding from their ancient roots right up to modern geopolitics, and we're also going to tackle a specific question that comes up a lot. Are there actually Circassians in Afrin? The answer, you'll find, tells us quite a bit about shifting political landscapes and historical facts.
It really is a compelling story, and it highlights themes much broader than just one community, doesn't it? Themes of displacement, identity, that struggle for recognition in a deeply complex part of the world. The sources we've gathered give us an incredibly detailed picture, letting us trace their path through centuries of upheaval.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's kick off right at the beginning. Who exactly are the Circassians? Our sources clarify that the people we usually call Circassians, well, that's exonym, a name given by outsiders, they actually call themselves the Adai.
Mm-hmm.
They're an indigenous group from the Northwest Caucasus. And before the 19th century, historical Circassia was quite formidable. The largest nation in the Caucasus, geographically speaking.
Yeah, about 100,000 square kilometers. And by the 17th century, maybe 1.7 million people. A significant presence.
And their structure was key, wasn't it? This confederation of 12 distinct tribes.
Absolutely foundational. You see it symbolized in the 12 stars on their flag tribes, like the Abzak, the Kabardians, the Shapsi. But the structure, this unity, was later very deliberately undermined by Soviet policy.
Ah, right. Dividing them administratively to sort of weaken that collective identity.
Precisely.
And their culture sounds like this fascinating mix. Sunni Islam became dominant around the 17th century, right? Ottoman influence there.
Largely, yes. But their society is really governed by something even older, this moral philosophy called Arikabze.
Arikabze.
Yeah. And it's not just rules. It's a whole worldview. It dictates social etiquette, honor, personal conduct. It's truly a cornerstone.
So it provides kind of cultural anchor, especially in the diaspora.
Exactly. It's incredibly central.
Yeah.
And their language, Adi, is part of the Northwest Caucasian family, completely unrelated to Semitic or Slavic languages. It really underscores their distinctiveness.
And that distinctiveness becomes tragically important when we turn to the unrecognized genocide and the Great Exile of 1864. This wasn't people choosing to move. It was a direct result of the Russo-Circassian War, wasn't it? Driven by Russian expansion.
Absolutely. A century-long conflict culminating in catastrophe. Russian military documents from the time actually used the word Okisheni cleansing. Some generals even described Circassians as subhuman filth. The language is chilling.
God, that's awful. And the human cost.
Staggering. At least 600,000 perished. Some estimates go much higher, maybe 1 to 2 million. From massacres, starvation, exposure, by 1864, you're looking at maybe 3/4 of their entire population just gone, annihilated.
And the survivors, forced expulsion.
Up to 1.5 million deported, primarily to the Ottoman Empire.
And that journey itself was horrific. The Black Sea crossing.
A complete humanitarian disaster. Overcrowded ships, disease, starvation, drowning. Ottoman archives from 1879, years later, still documented, finding nearly half of over a million refugees dying on arrival, just dying on the shores.
So this is how they became one of the first stateless peoples of the modern era.
Yes. And this massive trauma, this forced expulsion, it sets this grim pattern. It's the first major blow in a cycle of violent displacement that really defines their modern history.
And it shapes their relationship with state power going forward, presumably.
Definitely. A deep-seated caution. But the Ottoman Empire saw an opportunity in these displaced Muslims.
Right. They needed manpower, loyal groups for restless regions.
Exactly. And the Circassians, known for their loyalty and martial skills, seemed ideal. So they were strategically resettled on the frontiers of Ottoman Syria.
To do what? Establish state control? Pacify Bedouin tribes?
All of the above. Hmm. And create buffers against groups like the Druze.
And this led to the Circassian Nalms Line, as our sources call it.
That's what some Circassians called it, yes. A chain of settlements running from Menbe up in northern Aleppo, down through Homs, Damascus, the Golan Heights, even into Jordan.
So where were the main settlements in Syria itself?
Primarily, the Golan Heights, Kenitra became a major center, 11 to 16 villages there, making them the largest ethnic minority in southern Syria at the time. Also Homs, Hama, the Damascus countryside like Marj al-Sultan, and crucially for our discussion, northern Aleppo places like Menbe and Qanisir.
Okay, so this really establishes that theme you mentioned, this cycle of repeated violent displacement.
Precisely. Trauma 1, the 1864 genocide and exile. Trauma 2, the 1967 Israeli occupation of the Golan, which destroyed those communities.
Right.
And trauma 3, the Syrian civil war starting in 2011, which devastated their remaining villages yet again. This pattern is just central to their collective memory and their wariness of state power.
Which brings us back to that question about Afrin. Given this history, where does the idea of Circassians and Afrin come from? It seems odd.
It does seem odd based on the historical settlement patterns. Before 2018, Afrin district itself was overwhelmingly Kurdish. Homogeneously so, really. Over 500,000 people.
And the Ottoman resettlement records, do they show Circassian villages within the Afrin district boundaries?
No, not established communities from that period. The main northern settlements, as we said, were further east, Manbij, Kanasir. There's an isolated mention of a community near the Afrin Valley way back in the 12th century, but that's an outlier and not connected to the 19th century resettlement.
Okay, so here's where it gets interesting, as you said. The term Circassians of Afrin is about modern politics, not history.
Exactly. It reflects Reith's administrative geography. In 2014, the Kurdish-led Autonomous Administration of North and East Syria, the AANS, set up the Afrin Region Canton.
Right, part of their federal project.
Yes. And that administrative region, for a time, included not just the Kurdish-majority Afrin district, but also the adjacent Shaba region, and it had close ties to Manbij.
Ah, and both Shaba and Manbij do have documented Circassian populations historically.
Correct. So the query, are there Circassians in Afrin? It's really a product of the AANS administrative map overlapping with historical presence in adjacent areas connected under that temporary political structure, not about Circassians being historically settled in Afrin district itself.
That clarifies a lot. So let's look at Manbij then, a key northern anchor, resettled by Ottomans in 1878.
Yes, a foundational population. By 1911, sources suggest Manbij's 1,500 residents were pretty much entirely Circassian.
But that's changed drastically now.
Oh, completely. Today, Manbij is a diverse city, maybe close to 100,000 by the early 2000s, largely Arab, but with Kurdish, Turkmen, Circassian, and Chechen minorities. The Circassian presence now is described as more at symbolic levels demographically.
Still politically significant within the AANS framework.
Yes. After the SDF liberated Manbij from ISIS in 2016, Circassians were given representation. They got 8 out of 142 seats on the Manbij City Council, and they were included in the Manbij Military Council.
So that shows a deliberate AANS policy to include minorities, even small ones.
It does demonstrate that aspect of their governance model.
And beyond Manbij, there's the Shaba region right next to Afrin district.
Yes. Historically, Shaba had a small, maybe 5% Circassian and Arnaut population, but its demographics were massively changed after 2018.
When Turkey invaded Afrin.
Exactly. Shaba became the refuge, the last free region of the Afrin Canton, as some called it, for hundreds of thousands of displaced Kurds from Afrin. So its original composition was overwhelmed.
And Kanasir, southeast of Aleppo.
Also resettled by Circassians, initially from Manbij in the early 20th century. Had about 2,500 Circassians in the 1970s, but like many places, largely depopulated during the Civil War.
Oh, Hannah the Chai Lady is here. Rouge Bosh Hannah. You know, this is my favorite part of our day. Let's see how the chai is today. Sip. A little bitter. Needs more sugar, I think, but still good. How about you? Is yours just right, or do you need a bit more sweetness? All right, refreshed and ready to keep going. Okay, so let's move into how the Circassians navigated the Syrian civil war from 2011 onwards. What was their initial stance?
Well, officially, the community aimed for neutrality, which, given their history of being caught between powers, makes sense.
But the reality was more complicated.
Much more. The community was fragmented. You had many Circassians who served in the Syrian military and security services. That's a legacy of Ottoman and French mandate times, valuing their loyalty.
But others didn't side with the regime.
No, definitely not all. Some defected, others supported the uprising. The Aday Caucasus Association, for example, called it a popular revolution and reported over 200 Circassians detained by the Assad regime early on.
So neutrality didn't really offer protection?
Not in practice. Circassian majority villages like Marj al-Sultan near Damascus or Bir Ajam and Barika in the Golan area, they became battlegrounds anyway.
And this triggered the third major displacement you mentioned.
Yes. Tens of thousands forced to flee again. Many went to establish diaspora communities in Turkey or Jordan. Others sought repatriation to the ancestral homeland in the Caucasus.
Then came January 2018, Operation Olive Branch, Turkey and the SNA invading Afrin.
A major geopolitical rupture. The official reason given was fighting terrorism, meaning the YPG, and creating a safe zone.
But the rhetoric suggested something else.
The talk about returning Afrin to its rightful owners strongly signaled an intent for demographic change. And the name Olive Branch for an invasion was widely seen as pretty Orwellian.
It led to a humanitarian catastrophe, didn't it?
Absolutely. Hundreds of civilians killed, around 300,000 Kurdish residents forcibly displaced, widespread, documented violations by the Turkish-backed SNA followed, looting, seizing homes, arbitrary detention, torture, war crimes.
Were Circassians directly targeted in Afrin?
Not specifically targeted in the way the Kurdish population was, no, because as we established, they weren't really an Afrin district historically, but the consequences were profound for the region.
How so?
The mass exodus of Kurds from Afrin poured into the adjacent Shaba region, which, as we noted, did have a small Circassian minority. This created huge pressure, instability, a volatile security situation right on their doorstep. Afrin became this zone of lawlessness that threatened everyone nearby.
So in the areas controlled by the SDF and ANEs, Circassians found themselves as a minority within a Kurdish-led political project.
That's right. And the ANE's governing framework, the social contract, it formally promotes pluralism and guarantees representation for all communities. Arabs, Kurds, Syriacs, Turkmen, Circassians.
Like we saw in Manbi with the council seats.
Exactly. The SDF even appealed for Circassian youth to join their forces.
But what does this actually mean in terms of power?
Well, ultimately, power dynamics reflect demography. Circassians are a very small minority. They get symbolic inclusion, which is important, but they lack real independent leverage. Their security, their standing, it's largely contingent on the strategic calculations of the AAD.
So it's that paradox again. Their distinct identity makes them useful to larger powers. Ottomans, French, Ba'athists, now ANEs, as soldiers, buffers, symbols of pluralism.
But that value is conferred externally, and their small numbers mean they're always politically vulnerable. Their security is perpetually contingent.
And that vulnerability is thrown into sharp relief by what happened in Afrin after 2018.
Yeah.
A human rights black hole, you called it.
That's what numerous human rights reports describe. Systematic violations by the Turkish-backed SNA factions, arbitrary detention, torture people, talk about the black prison near Raju.
Kidnapping for ransom too, right? Forced disappearances.
Yes, and sexual and gender-based violence, recruitment of child soldiers. It's a grim picture.
Primarily targeting Kurds. But the lawlessness affects everyone.
Of course. And there's this systematic demographic engineering seizing homes of displaced Kurds, giving them to Arab or Turkmen families brought in, expropriating olive groves, destroying livelihoods, even cultural destruction targeting Yazidi and Alevi sites.
And for the Circassian communities nearby, in Shaba or Manbi.
This violent, unstable regime right next door is a constant looming threat. It just underscores the fragility for all minority groups in northern Syria.
Yet somehow amidst all this, their culture survives. You mentioned the Aga Kabze acting as a portable homeland.
It's remarkable. That unwritten code of ethics, respect for elders, respect for women, bravery, hospitality, it provides this incredible social cohesion, a shared identity that persists even when they've lost their physical home multiple times over.
But there are challenges to cultural survival, surely. Language, for instance.
That's the primary challenge, yes. The erosion of the Adaid language. There's no formal state-supported education in Adi in Syria. Younger generations integrated into Syrian society primarily speak Arabic. It's declining rapidly, and that's a huge source of anxiety for the community.
I can imagine. And what about gender dynamics? The Kabze emphasizes respect for women.
It does. Traditionally, women were seen as pillars of honor, even mediating disputes. Some analysis suggests diaspora life might have reinforced patriarchal norms in some ways. However, in the Ananis-controlled areas, you have the influence of the very strong Kurdish women's movement and the policy of female co-leadership in governance. This has actually created new opportunities for Circassian women to participate in public life, which is a really interesting development.
Okay, let's look at the very recent past and the future. The fall of the Assad regime in December 2024. That must have been a watershed moment.
Absolutely huge. And a direct consequence was seen on May 21st, 2025, the first public day of mourning held in Damascus to commemorate the 1864 genocide.
Unthinkable under the old regime, especially given its alliance with Russia.
Completely unthinkable. The Circassian Charity Association celebrated the end of injustice and oppression and committed to building a free and proud Syria. It really highlights their dual identity, a unique heritage, but also seeing themselves as part of the Syrian fabric.
But optimism must be mixed with anxiety.
Definitely. They're a small, non-Arab Sunni minority. They don't have the demographic or political weight of Arabs or Kurds. Their future security really depends on whether the new Syria is genuinely pluralistic or if it falls into some new form of majoritarian rule.
And there's the potential complication of their historical role in the Ba'athist security services. Could that make them targets?
It's a risk in a volatile transition. Their newfound freedom of expression, like commemorating the genocide, is also tied to shifting geopolitics specifically. The weakening of the Russia-Syria alliance.
Which brings us to the global diaspora. How crucial is that network?
Incredibly crucial. The Syrian civil war created a new wave of Circassian refugees, mostly going to Turkey and Jordan, where large communities already existed. Diaspora networks like KFED, based in Turkey, provided vital support, helping Syrian Circassians avoid some of the worst hardships other refugee groups faced.
And the ultimate dream for many is still returning to the North Caucasus.
That aspiration for return to the ancestral homeland remains very strong, and the Syrian war intensified those calls.
But it hasn't been easy. Russia's stance.
Largely uncooperative. There's suspicion of activism, maybe fears of Islamist infiltration, concerns about disrupting the ethnic balance in the North Caucasus republics. So, despite tens of thousands wanting to return from Syria, only a few thousand have actually been permitted resettlement by Russia.
Is there anywhere else they've found more welcoming?
Interestingly, the partially recognized Republic of Abkhazia, which has its own complex history with Georgia and Russia, has been more welcoming. They even established a repatriation fund for Circassians. It really shows the complex international dimension.
Okay, so let's try and synthesize all of this. What are the core findings? First, that term Circassians of Afrin. It's definitely a modern political label, right? Linking the Kurdish district with nearby Circassian areas under the Annus administration, not a reflection of deep historical settlement in Afrin itself.
Precisely. And second, their history in Syria is defined by these layers of trauma. The 19th century genocide and exile, the 1967 Golan displacement, the 2011 civil war.
Which forged resilience through things like Adige Kabzi, but left them politically very precarious.
Exactly. In northern Syria today, they're a small minority. They get symbolic inclusion from the Annus, but have little independent power. Their security is fragile.
And the 2018 Turkish invasion of Afrin looms large, creating that human rights black hole nearby, a constant threat to regional stability.
Yes. And finally, the post-2024 transition in Syria offers new freedoms, like publicly mourning the genocide, but also carries significant risks in the power vacuum. Their fate remains tied to bigger regional and international forces.
Given all that, what are the key recommendations coming out of these sources for stakeholders? Why should people listening care about these potential solutions?
Well, first, for international human rights bodies, the UN, HRW, Amnesty, groups like that, the recommendation is to commission specific research focusing on the protection gaps and rights of these small, non-belligerent minorities in northern Syria. Circassians, Chechens, Turkmen, Yazidis.
Because current reporting often focuses on the main warring parties.
Exactly. A dedicated focus ensures their unique vulnerabilities aren't missed. And monitoring is needed across all zones of control, Turkish-occupied AAAU areas, and whatever transitional governance emerges.
Okay, second recommendation. For Circassian diaspora organizations themselves.
For groups like KFFED or the International Circassian Association, establish a unified international fund and advocacy platform just for Syrian Circassians' needs.
To coordinate efforts globally.
Yes. Prioritize funding for language preservation. That's critical. Legal aid for property restitution, for lands lost in places like Marj al-Sultan or Khan Asir, and sustain diplomatic campaigns pushing for easier repatriation to the North Caucasus.
And finally, for international policymakers, U.S., EU, and importantly, any future Syrian government.
The strong recommendation is to insist that any new Syrian constitution or political settlement includes an explicit, robust minority rights charter.
Why is that so critical?
To prevent sliding back into Ba'athist Arab nationalism or some new tyranny of the majority, lasting stability in Syria depends on legally codifying and protecting rights for all ethnic and religious groups. This charter needs specific, enforceable rights, cultural expression, mother tongue education, fair political representation for groups like Circassians, Assyrians, Druze, and others. It's really a prerequisite for an inclusive, lasting peace.
It's quite a story. The Circassians in Syria, a testament to an enduring spirit, determined to keep their identity alive despite wave after wave of displacement and these huge geopolitical shifts. It really reminds you that history isn't just about the big narratives. It's about the nuanced experiences of communities caught in the crosscurrents. So maybe the final thought for you, our listeners, is this. Given this unique history and their current precarity, how can the global community move beyond just acknowledging the plight of stateless or vulnerable minorities like the Circassians? How can we actively help secure their future, ensuring not just cultural survival, but also political agency in this rapidly changing world? Something to consider as you continue to explore the complex tapestry of global affairs.